Hi everyone, this is JP Morgenthau and welcome to AI in Motion. It's the podcast about everything that's AI in supply chain and manufacturing. And today I have a guest with me, Alex Bolin. And Alex is currently, I have a son, Alec. And I always have to be really careful, and you learn after a while not to express the S even though your mouth wants to.
Yeah.
Especially with parent, you know, when it's pluralized.
It's
Alex Toy, right? Sorry if that didn't come out as cleanly. Alex Bolin, who serves as he's the president of Digital Thinker. Digital Thinker is a small veteran-owned business, and so thank you for your service. He's actually still registered as a Army Reservist, which is fantastic. Today's topic is going to be on enterprise asset management. The Digital Thinker is a provider of enterprise asset management solutions, and I think this is a really great and an important topic for supply chain professionals, and maybe even a little bit ignored, especially bigger in manufacturing. But I mean, if you're doing distribution, logistics, your equipment is your lifeblood, and if you're not properly handling and taking care of it, So I think this is a good foundational topic to discuss. So a little bit more on Alex. He is the father of two, a boy two, and a girl who's 6 weeks
old. Little baby. Yeah, 6 weeks old.
He looks good for a man who gets no sleep. His early work was with EMT and local 911 organizations, so he's been out in the field and understands a first responder how important knowing where your stuff is on the truck, and so and when he's not being a dad, his next big passion is sailboat racing, so
yeah.
So good to meet you, and thank you for joining us. I really appreciate it. Let's really keep it light and entertaining, but by the same token, I think both of us want the same thing, which is for our audience to learn something. And it's great that you're passionate about this topic. And you and I had a brief conversation the other day about what is really EAM. I've done some asset management. I built an asset management product in the past, and didn't get into the depth that you have. Let's start with just quickly tell everyone what you told me about how deep enterprise asset management goes with regard to companies that are supply chain business how important it is for them, and it's a direct correlation to maintenance and repair, right?
It is. I mean, so it's a direct correlation to supporting maintenance and enabling maintenance is probably the most critical element around asset management, right? And then the next component is teetering that super fine line balance of investment in maintaining the assets themselves. So there's there's the world where you can spend too much money over maintaining them, too much time, effort, material, doing redundant maintenance, similar, like you wouldn't change the oil in your car every 30 days, when the recommended mileage is like 3,000, or with synthetic lubrication, it's really more up to about 10,000 miles now, right? So you want to try to extend the life of what you can out of that. But then on the flip, right, if you don't do any maintenance at all, how much more money is that going to cost you? So it's a fine balance. But to answer your question, how deep does enterprise asset management go, right? So I think a question that was posed to me at one point in time is when does asset management begin for manufacturing or any organization that's asset intense, right? When does asset management begin? And some answers are, asset management begins the day the equipment's installed, or the day we start producing widget number one, or, there's a few other reasons, but I think to me, the day asset management begins is honestly the day the founder says, I'm going to start a company that makes XYZ components, because you have to start thinking about what equipment you're going to be purchasing, how you're going to be commissioning it, how are you going to take care of it. It's like I say in another analogy with it is, you know, starting a company isn't quite just like, you know, diving head first. Well, it is diving head first into a pool, but it's, I'm trying to compare it to the dating world, right? With asset management. So you don't ask, your date on the first date.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we going to get married and what are our kids going to do? Right. Like that's kind of crazy. You got to see, there's a lot of other questions that got to happen to get to the point of effective asset management and care. So anyway, what we do is we try to enable manufacturing companies through enterprise asset management and an effective strategy that's digitized to capture the lifecycle cost of an asset from cradle to grave. And what is that asset lifecycle cost? Well, not only how much did it cost to buy it, commission it, install it, but what does it cost us to maintain it? And that is not just labor, maintenance labor, but it's also what parts, spare parts do we use regularly and how much are those parts cost? And then depreciation of said asset over time. So then we can get to an informed decision-making process of when is it time to decommission and install a new asset. So it's all about collecting the right amount of data for you and your business to make the right decisions on the pieces of equipment that are your lifeblood, that are making you revenue, so, right? And then the other side of that, sorry, I didn't mean to, I'll let you go.
Your passion. So, yeah. I mean, when we had a discussion the other day, the first thing that I was thinking about after the fact is, I mean, like so many other critical factors within the business, it's a risk management play, right?
And yeah, absolutely.
You have cybersecurity. How much am I going to invest in cybersecurity? Am I going to be on the zero side and pray that I never get hacked and lose data and then get sued? To spending, you know, ridiculous amounts of money to, you know, to try to fortify everything against an attack, right? Which never works anyway, right? So there's some play, there's some number in there that an executive has to analyze the business and say, hey, this is fair relative to the value I get for it. And then, so immediately when you were review, you know, going over what you do with it, I that was what was relatable to me. It's a risk management play, right? There's a, how much is it worth, you know, how much do I need to invest in order to cover my investment or insure my investment? It's almost like an insurance plan.
Yeah, and like we can even take it a step further on that risk portion. Like we also support a product called Asset Performance Management. But so we support Hexagon, EAM, and APM. And so Asset Performance Management or APM is designed to even get more detailed on that risk factor on specific assets to the point to where you know, we can load your like preventative maintenance scheduling into a risk analyzer, and it's super simple to data to digest, thankfully, that like what's the cost of the asset, what's the maintenance that needs to be done. Most common example is changing a heating element on a boiler, right? When is the right time to do it versus when is not the right time to do it. So if we follow the calendar plan, that could be one way of doing it. But let's say the maintenance doesn't get executed on the calendar date. How much risk am I at, dollar value risk, for not having done that maintenance on that specified day? And so we got a little slider bar of like, okay, if I don't do it for another 10 days, how much more money am I exposed for? And so on the asset performance management level, it's all about you know, prioritizing the performance of your assets or athletes, if you will. And how far can you extend them before they need work to be done or be exposed at a risk of a failure and what it's going to cost you? So, you know, we can get even like more granular into that.
How many of your customers are now looking to capture and this information in real time so that they can become, so they can leverage new AI tools to do proactive and predictive analytics in this area?
Yeah, so honestly, I would say it's not a big number of my customer base that's, you know, like actively pursuing this. I would say somewhere between 15 and 20%. And so, you know, the thing, and I think the reason being is a lot, I don't want to put a number on this because I don't know, but I just know that a lot of manufacturing in America, they're still fighting the fire that is reactive maintenance, right? Like whether it's, we just can't get around the curve of reactive maintenance to proactive maintenance, whether that's, you know, they don't have an application system to help them out. More times than not, it's because they don't have a robust, like, fundamentals in place of how they do work and how they do business as a maintenance team or as a business as a whole, right? So there's just not a good foundational element to build for a software to build upon. So that's one key element. But then, like, most of my other customers, like, they just got around the curve of what I would call industry, like, 3.5, right? Like, they're leveraging some form of predictive maintenance. They're leveraging some form of preventative maintenance scheduling and capturing some advanced forms of data just beyond work order management. Introducing AI and other data elements to get them to that point, it's still such a big leap. Like, it's like sprinting, you know, 300 meters, you stop and take a breath and it's like, all right, man, we got to go another 500. And you're like, Jesus Christ, man, I just stopped. Let me catch my breath. So, you know, I think it's coming. And I think people see that, like, they're allured by what AI can do for their data and enhancing their overall work process. But where I'm leery is, again, a lot of these, you know, companies are still just in, like, an industry 3.0, 3.5 era. And they're just trying to catch up and they're trying to, you know, where to make the right investments. And then on the other side too, I think there's some companies and probably smaller number, but they're happy at industry 3.5. They don't need to go any further.
What is it about this? I mean, you look at financial services and insurance, obviously these are, you know, industries that I guess more than anything, they live and breathe and die by the data. We've always felt, a group of us have always felt like manufacturing, supply chain, really, I mean, there's a lot of waste. There is a lot of waste in managing a supply chain. A lot of back office functions still labor-led. A lot of, you know, warehouse management still labor-led. And a lot of dysfunction in the warehouse. And I'm going to come back to that in a minute because I have a question about inventory. But let's stick with this. So Industry 3.5, you say they're happy with it. Why do you think that it, and do you think that they're gonna, do you think that the world is gonna force them to leave and become Industry 4.0, 5.0 to survive?
I don't think the world is gonna force them. I think as we see a generational shift in the workforce, that's what's gonna drive it to that next stage of technology. You know, we all know, or at least I would hope so, right, that, you know, I think the last statistic I saw was 2.8 million boomers are expected to retire this quarter of this year.
Wow.
And, you know, I think it was like almost 3 million last quarter. Like, there's just a massive exit of knowledge leaving the workforce for one. So that's like one critical, you know, or obstacle that we're facing. Everybody is, not just manufacturing. But the second piece is, right, as they start to leave, and you have Gen X and millennials and then Gen Z coming up behind them, you've got a new wave of generations that are just more, I think, inclined to adopt technology and use it in a way that's going to be beneficial for them. And then in today's, you know, circumstances, we have a 1,001 products and, you know, software that can do something for them. And there's a lot of it that is low to no cost that can move the needle high for them. And then there's also a lot that is high cost and can move the needle in very dramatic ways. So, I mean, I don't think that these companies are just going to stay there and just be stuck like Chuck because we're happy with what we're doing. I think we're going to see like a new maintenance manager or a new VP of ops step in and say, all right, guys, we've been doing a good job for the last, let's say, 10 years of what we're doing. It's time to take it to the next level. We can do it better. We can be more efficient, less wasteful, more you know, sustainable on how we produce our equipment and, or not equipment, but our things.
Our product,
and this is what we're going to do to get there, right? And that, so we're going to see, you know, I think if you think about building like a skyscraper, maybe, right? Like, you build the foundation, and that's a lot of manufacturing has a good foundation. And then you go up one tier, and now we have to build a new foundational infrastructure before we go to the next tier. And so I think we're kind of stuck at that one tier. And then, as you know, we have new generational folks coming in, we're going to continue to see the rise up and go.
Talking with Alex Bolin of Digital Thinker. And so, Alex, we've been talking about enterprise asset management. I have a question, a thing, part of what I'm passionate about, and I want to hear your thoughts about what you see, and then, you know, how things can get better. Inventory management. A big part of enterprise asset management is still the inventory. You have these two different inventory worlds, right? You have my raw materials inventory, right? So I'm a manufacturer, I'm a distributor. Everything's about what I'm moving, what I'm creating, what I'm shipping. That's that's my blood, right? I'm going to take care of that, or at least I should. But there's a lot of dysfunction still around that I read and hear, right? People lose it, you know, the warehouse can't find certain, you know, parts they have in stock, and stuff is sitting on the shipping receiving dock for days instead of being put away, right? All that, right? You have labor issues. But then you have on top of that, you layer on top of that the EAM inventory. My boiler parts, my, you know, shelving system, all the things that, you know, are foundational to me, you know, keeping the operations running, but often gets less love. So I do want to hear from you what you see out there from your customers. How do they think of it as one? Do they think of it as two in your EAM world? Do they separate them out? And then, you know, how do they manage that? And what does the dysfunction around inventory look like in your side of the block?
Yeah. Great question. So I think from like a raw materials standpoint, I don't see a whole lot of that being managed in EAM. I think I see more of that in, you know, ERPs, maybe some other third-party applications
I didn't mean to imply that they use the EAM good. Product. I'm saying there's an inventory for maintenance MRO. There's MRO inventory.
Yes. Right?
When I'm a manufacturer, where do I keep my MRO inventory? Do I mix it in with what do you see them doing out there? Do they hide it away in another area where it gets lost?
Okay. Sorry. I see what you're saying. I apologize.
That's all right.
Yeah. So, you know, I think people that I, or organizations that do it smartly, they have small storerooms spread out across the plant. And they allocate certain critical spare parts to each storeroom across the plant for easy and quick access to it if and when a critical failure or a failure occurs on a critical asset. So those are the ones that I think are, I don't want to say they're doing it right, but they're doing it smart. And then they're, you know, leveraging EAM from a data collection standpoint of knowing, all right, this is where this part is in this storeroom, and it's located at this, you know, place inside of the manufacturing facility. And then, you know, capabilities, which I feel like are, I say basic, but I'm still seeing a lot of companies have a hard time getting to this point, which is just simple barcode scanning on getting materials in and out of the cage, right? Hey, I'm pulling it out of the shelf, B, bin 6, beep, scanned it. And it's off the shelf and we know it's being used, but you know, there's folks that are still having a hard time getting there. But then I've also seen, I say the polar opposite end of the spectrum where like we showed up on site one time and said, hey, we need to do an inventory count so we can get the right data in the EAM. And the guy said, whoa, I don't know how we're going to do this. And we said, well, why, where's your inventory room? And he said, well, the inventory room is already a mess. That's not the problem. The problem is I've got probably 20 pumps spread out over a 400-acre facility, and I have no idea where they are. And it's like, oh, that's the kind of problems that we're seeing in some ways, right? And I think the reason some of that happens is, right, like we lose a little bit of discipline in the storeroom efficacy of how we're actually working, but we're not setting those individuals up for success if we're not taking the time to make sure, you know, we do have it properly organized and we know what's coming on and off the shelf. One small story, and this is like a real world application, man. We saw this happening not too long ago. I mean, they're using EAM or our flavor of EAM, and they're doing an okay job with it. But we walk into their storeroom and it's a big storeroom. It's probably, I'd say 30 feet tall, shelves to the ceiling. They, you know, got to utilize a lot of forklifts and whatnot. And that room is jam packed. I mean, to the gills. And in the middle of the storeroom are stacks of pallets of additional spare parts and consumables like PPE equipment and stuff like that. And we're just kind of like, whoa, this is,
you can't even get in.
You guys got a lot going on.
You can't get in. Yeah. What's going on?
And so we're asking naturally, like, are you guys using this much stuff? And the MRO director is like, no, that's why they hired me. I'm here to help clean this up. And so as we started investigating, like what was happening, they're, again, going back to the fundamentals, right? A good foundational business process. A maintenance manager or engineering manager would be working on something, or a reliability engineer for that matter, would be working on something and then write down on his little notebook, need 6 gaskets, this, this, this. peel it off, take it to the inventory clerk, slap it on her desk and say, hey, I need these. And she just would say, okay, and would order them as it came in and wasn't checking what's on the shelf. It didn't help that she also didn't know what was on the shelf because it wasn't being logged in EAM, right?
What do these do? I mean, the funny thing is some of these companies have very, very mature inventory management processes on the manufacturing or the retail side of their organization, but then they have this and it's like free for all. There's no, they don't take the same level of maturity around driving intraday inventory. Nobody knows they took the part out of, you know, for MRO. So the disciplines aren't transferred, and which is amazing to me. It's like, if you have a discipline, why wouldn't you follow this discipline?
Yeah. Well, what was even funnier, and I think ironic on this whole piece, is they had a very advanced piece of equipment to help not only like theft prevention, but just to help the maintenance team get the right equipment at the right time. So they had a, what's called a Cardex system. And if you've ever seen one of these, right, like they're these giant conveyor belt shelving type things. And, you know, on the storeroom side, it opens up and you've got all these bins and there's a screen that says, all right, we need to put this part in here because this work order is coming out. And it's designed, right? So on the other side, when the maintenance tech comes, he scans in, the shelf comes down and boom, here's his parts. But they weren't really using it. And so I was like, man, you guys have the fanciest tools in the world out here, but you're not doing a great, and I don't mean this any ill by them, but I mean, you guys aren't doing a great job of just learning and understanding the fundamentals.
Those are amazing systems. I was at a major pet food supplier slash retailer in their warehouses. They had one of those they installed, you know, where you load up the boxes on the top and then, you know, pick the pick tickets will, you know, move them to different you know, lines and so that you can properly load them into the shipping, outbound shipping. And it was down 70% of the time. It wasn't being used, and they would default to their old world, you know, methods. And so I wonder if you know, the technology is great, but there's a level of the skill in the warehouse and in the organization that you need to really use that. And it's not one person. You can't have one person be the expert. It's got to be kind of a group of people that understand the entire flow.
Yeah, it's a team sport, right? Like manufacturing is really much, it is exactly a team sport. Everybody needs to know their own role, but they need to know what the other roles of people adjacent to them are. I mean, maintenance, certainly, but I mean, even beyond maintenance, to operations, and I say even sales to that matter, like everybody needs to be on the same page of what the bigger picture and bigger mission is, and then micro-sizing it down to what their roles and responsibilities are. But, you know, I think one thing that we try to do for our customers that we see success out of is when we go to implement EAM, and let's say we're in the storeroom, right? And we come into a situation where there's really good processes. So we don't want to change that. We want to conform EAM to meet those processes. We put all that stuff in a physical binder book. And when we go live, we hand it to them and say, you need to find a place in this storeroom where you can bolt it to the wall with a wire string. And anybody that comes in and out of this store, right? Like, because for example, Mary, who's been the storeroom manager for 26 years, is probably going to retire. And you're going to hire somebody else to fill that role. And they may not have all of Mary's knowledge, especially to your company. So they need a guide. They need a booklet to understand what to do next. Or even if you're on the other end of the spectrum, if for whatever reason you're having a hard time retaining talent, you still need to be able to have something that anybody can reference on how to get the job done and not just throw them in there and say, good luck, figure it out. By the way, I need a report on the inventory count by tomorrow. The CFO asked for it.
I can't tell you how many businesses, you know, even billion-dollar businesses have a Mary. They still have a Mary. Yeah. Like, she's been there 30 years with the company. And, like, she's, you know, and the problem is Mary doesn't want to let go of anything either, right? This is job security for Mary.
She's got her way of doing it, too.
So it's a really dangerous and high-risk, you know, perspective for the business. And I'm surprised that executive, but a lot of these companies are still family owned and operated, and you know, they've know there's an affiliation there. So you don't, like you were telling me, you came into this business, this was your dad's business, right? And but you've taken over as the lead executive, you know, and you're coming in with an executive perspective and in training, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a little bit different than the guy who, was more to the worker, right? Working, you know, we know what it's like. It's a family business. And you're coming in.
Yeah.
We got to make decisions, right? We got to work the business. And so a lot of them, they don't get rid of Mary, or they don't plan at least succession for Mary or replacement for Mary. And, you know, we talk a little bit, and a big part of this is AI, right? It's, I hate to say it, but AI is a great tool to use to help in planning the succession for Mary. Those are the type of things where, you know, AI would be a phenomenal asset. I was thinking, based on what you said, one of the things you said, I would take every person who's been at that business for 10 more years, I'd sit them in front of a video camera, and I'd make them tell me everything they did. Now, before, we would have that data would have sat on a tape or a disc and not been, it would be great to have, but no one would have used it. But now, we can pass that through something like ChatGPT or something, and it will take the transcript. It'll actually take the transcript of what they're saying and convert it into usable information, a knowledge base that can be searched. So, I mean, little things they can do today to help prepare the business, and leverage. But that tribal knowledge leaving that you mentioned about the boomers leaving, Mary's going to retire. What are you going to do? You're going to call her up, Mary, we can't find this part. Do you remember? you're not going to do that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny you mentioned that, right? Like, where I think AI is going to make asset management just be better. But I'm gonna say it differently. Where it's gonna make maintenance really great, right? So the whole premise of maintenance is most people it's two thoughts, right? You have total reactive maintenance, so firefighter mode. You know, how quickly can I get to the failure and fix it to get the machinery back up and running? And then the other side of it is, what can I do, I guess, for fire prevention? What can I do to keep it from failing? I know it's going to fail at some point, but how much work can I do to make sure that it doesn't? Risk mitigation, as we talked about. So anyway, what our product does really well, and I mean, there's others out there that do it too, but like we capture a lot of that knowledge and data on previous work orders being performed on those assets. So when we have this discussion that is happening in some manufacturing plant as we speak, some maintenance technician is grabbing an iPad, going to respond to a failure that is causing a overt amount of stress within the facility because maybe it's a critical asset. And he's walking his way to the asset with his iPad. And now he, hopefully, being the keyword, can search previous work order history on this asset to learn how to not only diagnose it if he doesn't already have a failure code involved with it, but he can see previous work done so he can do it quicker. That's a step in the right direction. And we've been doing that for probably 20 years, which is good, like rich data, right? That is really good information to have. Where AI is going to take this to the next level is how fast it can interpret that data and then recommend solutions on what needs to be done.
Well, yeah.
And there's some solutions out there doing that right now, but I'm weary of how accurate that data is.
The problem is search. So, search is never good, right? And one of the things that the LLMs do, the inference does, is it interprets. It doesn't have to be literal. So you can actually take that knowledge base of all the past work orders and say, you know, for this part number XXX, look at it and tell me about all the things that went wrong and the things that had to do to fix it. And it'll go and it'll be able to interpret that. Whereas your search, show me all the work orders for XX. Now I got to sit there and read it and try to interpret, right? So yes, you do have an assistant that's going through and making all that data. Let me ask you, a competitor question. I know you don't work for Hexagon. It's just you're a partner of them. So I'm hoping you have an answer to this for your customers and that you can answer it here. Tell me about, just what you think about IBM's direction with Maximo and all their investments in AI and what you think they may be able to do within this industry, given their investment on the AI side, and attacking this with the Mac, and then throwing that at Maximo.
Yeah. So I think this is interesting. So, Maximo is the biggest player. It's the 800-pound gorilla in the room, right? Like, they have the most market share when it comes to asset management, solutions that are out there that I think they own almost 60% of the market share right now. Like it, that is Maximo is the most prominent used application right now, followed probably by SAP and then Hexagon EAM really coming in and either a tie for second or a close third. And, you know, the next runner ups are like IFS and there's a couple of others. And then you got some of these smaller guys that are really shooting up like a rocket, like MaintainX and Upkeep. That they're doing some interesting things, but you know,
more focused
each application
on
kind
of part of the of EAM, probably.
Yeah, right? Yeah. But what I think IBM's doing is, and honestly, it's kind of the same thing Hexagon's doing, to be honest with you, is, you know, we have this application which the original code line was written probably like in 1998. Well, for Maximo, probably a little bit further back, but you know, like this robust feature was initially written, you know, almost 30 years ago. And so Maximo, SAP, and EAM still kind of have this at least look to it that feels older, let's say, right? Like it's not the most advanced user interface. It's not the sleekest and shiniest product on the market. So, and I think that's going to come. I think that we're going to see major updates to that, but that's not the most important element to the software.
You can finally get it as a SaaS. You can finally get it as a cloud.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, you know, the things that make these applications really work or what makes them so important is how robust and customizable it can be, not necessarily how pretty it looks. Right. So it's kind of what makes, you know, a Kenworth better than maybe a Peterbilt is what's under the hood and how's it working. Right. They're not pretty trucks, right? But by God, they can haul a lot of stuff. So anyway, I think the investment they're making into AI is to just reinforce the infrastructure that they currently have and how can they make the internals of the product work even better and then utilize AI, whether that's through LLM or neural network components that can make better decisions faster for these organizations. Because I mean, this is the same sentiment that's true since the dawn of time. How can we make better decisions faster? Plain and simple, right? How can we interpret the data quickly and then make a decision that's going to be the right one as quickly as possible? And that's, I think, where their investment in AI is going to be coming in with it. I'd be curious to see how it's going to play out. Like I know what Hexagon's doing with AI, and I think we're doing some cool things, but and I can only say from my side of the fence, right? So please, you can take my opinion with a grain of salt on this one, but I see Hexagon being very, very methodical about how we're introducing AI into the application. We're not rushing into anything. And we're trying, we're trying to do a great job of how we train the AI models that are interfacing with EAM and then the future ALI products that are going to go with it. So even though we're not the first ones on the block to, you know, slap the AI sticker on our product and say we've got it, I'm okay with that because we've got other things we got to figure out first before we can get to the AI component. But what I do know is it's being done in such a thoughtful way that the data that's going to come as a result is going to be intentional and meaningful, not just wide casting net and then throwing it all on the wall and hopefully we can decipher the spaghetti yet again.
I think what I would like as an output of this, in a, you know, I don't even want to talk autonomous, you know, manufacturing, but yeah. I would be happy from an MR, from a maintenance repair order perspective of, oh, the forklift is down, right? Here's the last data that we had from the SCADA, you know, device, you know, through IoT passing off. And it looks like it's probably this motor. This motor, you can find a replacement of this motor in this storeroom. Go get the motor and then replace the motor. And then, you know, did that fix it? Yes or no, right? So it's kind of like already moving the repair or, you know, operations person in the right direction, giving them a heads up of what it might be, kind of proactively sending them out there so they're not walking all the way to the down forklift, doing the assessment, then got to go all the way, you know. So it would be great. I know there's a lot of pieces to tie in there. And back to the investment, is it worth,
you
know, the company's going to have to, do I really want to pay for a SCADA to IoT interface, collect that data on the server, allow, you know, put the real-time monitoring on so that it's available, you know, that's, yes, but the question is, how much time do you save? Well, if you've saved an hour to get that lift back up in operation, you know, I'll ask you this question. You know, is it worth it to them just to pay to have an extra lift and then throw that into versus paying for all that infrastructure to keep the other ones in rotation?
So I think that, you know, the answer to that question from my perspective is one of two things. Well, there's 2 points to it, right? I think is it more cost effective to buy another lift and just have that sitting on the sideline? Sure, if you got the money to spend, right? Like, anything's possible through Jesus and money. Like, well, we could do anything in the
both
world.
Both of these are money. I mean, I got to do anything.
Yeah, right.
I got money I'm spending either way.
But yeah, they're spending money either way. I think the mindset I would like to encourage is let's think beyond the thought of I'm just going to buy another forklift. Well, that one can break too. Exactly. You know, it's not going to fix the problem if you got two broken forklifts. We got to think about the longer term strategy of how we're using the equipment, right? So, I mean, maintenance management and asset management turns into reliability, right? Yes. Like, how reliable and safe is my equipment when I go to use it?
That's
and
true.
How am I staying ahead of that curve and ahead of that matrix? And so one thing I wanted to mention, because I love your scenario that you put in there, you know, of like, forklift brakes, we have a sensor in place that can, you know, throw up the red flag and say motor failure or suspected motor failure. And through an internet connection, it can send it to EAM, and EAM can auto trigger a work order with a suggested replacement part based off of previous data, and then tell you where that part is, and then tell you where the asset is, and you go fix it. Dude, we're already doing that, man. That's not a tomorrow thought. Like, we've been doing this for probably 10 years already. And it's a lot simpler than I think people need to, or people understand. Is it a component of AI? Maybe we could call it that, right? Like, I think we're also throwing the term AI around so much right now that, like, Excel has been doing calculations for a long time before the word AI has been really coming around, right? So let's call that spade a spade on that component of it. But it does not cost, in my opinion, if you have a robust asset management application already in place, the next level of cost integrating a sensor to a critical asset to stay ahead of its failure and mean time between failure is minuscule compared to if you don't do it. Because I've got the perfect example. Perfect. Ugh. We're currently implementing EAM to a medical device manufacturing company. They make laparoscopic tools, super tiny, right? And they've been on a previous older version on-prem EAM, so locally hosted, and probably a version that's probably about 10 years old. And good for them. They're making it work. But what we found out was even crazier is when we got on site, they're still printing out work orders for the week and then writing notes. And
wow.
Somebody spends 8 hours a day every Friday inputting manual work orders from that week and then printing out next week's work orders. That's one problem. So we're going to fix that. We're going to empower them through mobile device technology and more licensing to get beyond that. But here's the critical component, right? Where they're manufacturing their pieces or their devices is in a sterile field. Right. So there's one way in, one way out.
Yep.
And there's a decon process getting in. There's a decon process getting out. We were finding for even simple troubleshooting pieces that need to happen on equipment, it was taking maintenance on average 45 minutes to get in and out of the sterile field. Mm. Just get in there 5 minutes to get sterile, get on the field, figure out what the problem is. I got to get out, go get a part, decon, get out, go find the part. No, the Lord knows how long that takes, but it was 45 minutes just physically getting in and out of the sterile environment. Any time a maintenance request came in, they knew automatically almost an hour's worth of time was going to be spent just getting in and out of the sterile field. So how do we fix that? How do we keep that from happening? It's what we just talked about. It's, you know, how can we put the data in somebody's hands from when a failure occurs? So what we're doing is the operation supervisors on the floor already have mobile devices that are company paid that's integrated to their MES. So they already got part of that component there. So now what we're going to do is we're going to give them an ability to submit a work order when a failure occurs. So it's easy. So this operation supervisor has their, you know, cell phone.
Take your parts in with you. And then if you need parts, you have a teammate outside.
Yeah.
Put it through the decon. So you just got to open the door and take it. You don't have to go through the decon. Yeah. Right. So.
Exactly. Always. So it's, you know, that element alone of shaving off not only that time is going to increase their throughput by almost 200% over a year's worth of time. And in manufacturing,
that's golden. I mean, that's money right there.
Yeah.
I'm making more.
Like
I'm
you
making
can't,
more bits. I'm making more tools.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And so like you can't like you just can't beat that kind of a scenario. That's where the investment plays off. That's yes. where big right. gains that, are happening.
I love it. There's the value proposition. Yeah, I'm you don't have to sell me. I'm a process guy.
I know.
That's the first thing I look for is let's walk through the process. Let's figure out where we can save mm-hmm. money in the process because you save yeah. shave a penny off of manufacturing costs or downtime, mm-hmm. you're making money. Hey Alex, this has been great. I think both
yeah,
of us
fun.
Keep going. And we can do it again, but our users are now saying, geez, this thing's running long. So
this has been
great. Thank you very much for participating
Thank
and
you.
Being my guest. It's been great.
Yeah, absolutely, JP. Thank you. And let's do it again. Looking forward to it.